thanks for finding Organic Matters once again this week. Hope I hit subjects, at least occasionally, that you're directly interested in. To begin this week, we're going to talk a bit about, I'm going to call it the worst garden pest. I found the information from a guy called The Seed Guy, which is a really great heirloom outlet, seedguy.net, and Mother Earth News, and what I've known over the years, and Bob Webster, and my old, now, sorry, deceased Malcolm Beck. So I threw it all together and try to answer this simply. Gardening is a simple thing. It shouldn't be as complicated as sometimes we make it. Number one in most of the nation, but not so much right here where I am, is slugs. And I do have them occasionally if I don't watch my watering. But it took top honors as the most bothersome pest in home gardens, with over half, about 55% of the respondents, saying these guys give them trouble year after year. Overall, hand picking was highly rated as a control measure. Over 80% of the people said they had a great success rate with it, followed by the iron phosphate baits like Slug-O and Slug-O Plus. About the same number, over 80% of the people said that worked. And older methods like DE was also successful. The one that I have not done myself, but people have tried, these eggshells sprinkled around, they crush them. And only about a third of the people said that that was as good as they thought it might be. An easy home remedy that received widespread support, believe it or not, and I love doing this, don't ask me why, are beer traps. And I won't explain them here, but they are self-explanatory. They work well. It's kind of satisfying. And in my case, for years, I was also, I'm a turtle nut. And boy, oh boy, that didn't ruin the slug or the snail, but the box turtles went crazy. It appears next on the list would be squash bugs. For one reason, for so many people grow squash. But squash bugs for both summer and winter squash, about half of the respondents said that it was a really serious problem. Some of them had a fair amount of success with ducks. I personally, it's been a long time ago, but I had guineas that really did solve the problem. Putting guineas in your garden is a noisy proposition. You got to depend on where you live, but they are bug experts. Of course, as with all, if you really enjoy outdoor gardening, hand picking is the primary defense, along with cleaning up infested plants at the season's end to interrupt the whole life cycle that those squash bugs go through. The value of companion planting for squash bug management, well, was sort of a point of not everybody agreed about it. About 20% said it was the best method of control, but over a third said didn't seem to help at all, so I don't know where you go on that. Of the gardeners who tried it, 80% said spraying neem on egg clusters and juvenile bugs worked well. About 74% of the row cover users found them useful in managing squash bugs. Next on my list is aphids. It might have should have been number one or two, I don't know, but about half of the people that responded to this I think this was to the Mother Earth survey, said that they had a problem with aphids, but they used various control techniques, and the ones that used them consistently found that it worked pretty well. Active intervention, including pruning off the affected plant parts and applying insecticidal soaps, were reported as effective, but so were more passive methods, such as my perfect one, when I can do it, is attracting beneficial insects by planting flowers and herbs around it that draw them in. Some of the respondents noted the ability of sweet alyssum and other flowers to attract hoverflies, which are incidentally eat aphids. We attract a lot of beneficials by planting what I call carefree flowers within the vegetable garden. Calendula, borage, zinnias, cosmos, nasturtiums, which are also incidentally very edible. And even passive spraying, folks, if you wash them off carefully, it's a good way to not bother your beneficials very much, but give you a kind of a heads up on your aphid problem. The next bug on the list, especially in our area, I'm not sure about nationwide because I haven't grown in all four corners of the country yet, are squash vine borers. They were shown to cause problems over half of the survey's respondents. The best reported control methods were crop rotation and growing resistant varieties of Cucurbita moschata. I don't know that. Well, I know I'm better off. Butternut squash and some of the pumpkins, for instance. And the reason is those varieties are borer resistant because they have solid stems that the borers just really can't get into. And the note I want to mention here is, again, from my old friend Malcolm Beck. He introduced me to a squash called the tatume, spelled just like it sounds. And it is vine borer resistant because, again, it has those same really tiny solid stems that the borer just can't really get into to lay its eggs. So that's one way around it. And incidentally, it is an excellent squash. In most parts of this country, there's Japanese beetles. We don't have that problem right here in South Texas. But about half the respondents reported working in the, they call it the unwelcome company of Japanese beetles. Number one by far is hand-picking the little buggers off. Some of the gardeners grow trap crops like some of the fruits and raspberries to keep the beetles away from their other plants. There's some interventions they use, garlic pepper spray, milky spore disease. There's even pheromone traps just for Japanese beetles and row covers too. But they all had relatively high failure rates. Now, I've not lived where Japanese beetles are for over a dozen years. Before I moved, they hadn't invented spinosad. And this is a guess, folks. I'd give it a try. Spinosad, I think, might be a relatively safe answer to this. You might want to try neem. But remember, both of those affect your honeybees and things. So be careful when and where you use those two products. But I'd give them a try if I was having to combat myself against Japanese beetles. And who hasn't run into tomato hornworms? Again, over half of the survey had trouble with them. My first and go-to for most caterpillars are those are always BT, Bacillus thuringiensis. Hand-picking is around if you want to do that, and I don't mind that a bit. Again, being a old-time turtle raiser, they went to good use. They loved them. And because they're so big, they really are kind of easy to pick off. And they grow so fast, I used to leave a few that I was just fascinated by. They are beautiful. You can call any caterpillar beautiful. They really are. And they eat their weight every day or more, and they grow. It's unbelievable. It's something to show kids. I was a teacher, and I would save some and bring the whole tomato plant into the room. And in a matter of a day or so, the worm had grown five times over, and the whole plant had been disassembled. And if you keep your garden organic, you'll see something kind of interesting. I would see whole hornworms covered, and at first it looked like someone had put rice and stuck it on the worm. But what they were the egg casings of a thing called the braconid wasp. Now, you can actually buy these things and have them come to your house, but you'll take care of it. They do a heck of a job on taking care of the worms themselves. And they're tiny. You don't even know. They're nothing to do with it. I always say wasp and everybody, oh, I'm going to get stung. No, that's not that kind of wasp. And people that are companion planters, and I've tried, I'm not as successful as some, found out that planting zinnias or borage plants in companionship with your tomatoes seem to serve a lot of the problems. And let's add at least one more. Let's talk about cutworms, which have been a problem of mine more often than not. And they seem to concern about, again, maybe half of the people that have responded. Effectiveness ratings were using rigid collars. That's how we did it. We made plastic drinking cups, or you can use cardboard rolls, you know, tissue rolls, and protect the young seedlings from damage. Were really, if you did it consistently, they worked 90% of the time. A common practice is to reuse cut run damage is to cultivate the surface, turn up your soil, which is the top inch or two now. I'm not big on plowing. Right before you're going to plant, and if you're lucky and it's early in the year, the robins and other bug-eating birds will sure come down and at least give you a good help of getting rid of a lot of the cutworms. The other way, and the way I actually turned to when I was doing a lot more gardening than I am now, was to hold off and plant my seedlings a little later. Give them because once they get up a little bit, they're pretty much resistant to that little cutworm. So I know there's a lot of other pests, but this really hits the base in the head for most of us. And so if you're considering any of these problems, think about what I said. I'm all organic, so I don't use, you'll notice I didn't talk about any of the pesticides. I think that's kind of, let's say the word naive. I don't like to use the word that starts with an S, stupid. To put poison on plants you're going to eat, it just doesn't seem like it makes any sense at all. Let me take the last minute or two here to give my little sales pitch on the reasons to find and buy heirloom seeds. Unlike what we call the hybrids, heirloom vegetables are old-time varieties that almost always open, pollinated instead of hybrid, and saved and handed down, gosh, through multiple generations. Usually they are a little less expensive than the hybrid seeds, but there's more reasons than just the seed prices to choose heirlooms. Number one, and I agree with this, exceptional taste. That's the number one reason. Crispy cabbages from nutty American squash and your grandma's great big red canning tomatoes. It's hard to even find some of the heirlooms now. They all immediately invoke what I call really images of those that were grown on original gardens back. I'm 70-some years old, folks, in my childhood, and I really, really do think they definitely taste better. In addition, it's interesting, studies show that heirloom vegetables are actually more nutritious than the newer varieties. Current science shows that these hybrids grow faster, but at the cost of the concentration of nutrition that you get from the plant. So you may get a few more tomatoes, but each of the tomatoes doesn't have near the nutrition value of the original heirlooms from which they were hybridized. And do realize, because almost all heirlooms are what we call open pollinated, that just means you can save your own seed to replant them year after year. The hybrids don't always come back true, so you can just perpetuate your own garden. And finally, which sounds backwards at first, heirlooms are usually less uniform. What does that mean to you? Well, tomatoes, for instance, always. These hybrids and the ones they're made to be commercial crops are made to home grow, come up, come all together, and be cropped. The heirlooms are less uniform than that. Tomatoes, some will bloom and ripen sooner or later than others. Some will be smaller, some will be bigger, but they give you a longer crop seasoning because you don't get them all at once. They grow more like what I would call a wild plant. So look for heirlooms. If you go even to, go to Tractor Supply, they have organic and they have hybrids, but they also have heirlooms. And invariably, the heirlooms are less expensive. And more importantly than that, now you can collect your own seeds. If you do it right, you have zero input for seeds after a year or two because you're producing all of your own. And they're open pollinated. They're ready to go the next season. They have a good high reproduction rate. And you really don't have to pay for them. All you have to do is take a little extra time when their season ends, depending on what you're planting, and save, put away your crop of seeds, let's call it, for your upcoming either fall planting or your next spring planting, whatever's coming up. And it's self-satisfying, number one. And number two, it's less expensive. I can't say not everything, but the way food prices are going up, it's getting to be pretty important for those of us that try to garden just to save ourselves a few bucks. Anyway, thanks for tolerating my bug part of the program. And thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matters.